Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hi gang, welcome back to The Drop-In. First of all, thank you so bloody much for all the lovely words after last week's conversation with Neil Warnock. What a legend. If you haven't caught that episode yet, do give it a listen. It's on the Football Ramble feed from a week ago. It's definitely one of my favourites so far this season. Today's guest has not only represented more football clubs than Neil, but he also has one of the most interesting stories you're ever likely to hear in the sport. You may have only heard of Lutz Pfannenstiel for the very first time on last week's Ramble Guide to Journeyman. He is the only player to play professionally on every continent in the world. In fact, over the course of his career as a keeper, he played at 25 different clubs in 21 different countries. He's experienced so many different footballing cultures, and now he's the sporting director of a brand new MLS club, St. Louis City, who'll be competing in the league for the first time next month. I thought it'd be really intriguing to hear about how you build a football club from scratch and also how you go about creating a fan base, and to get a sense of how he'd drawn on everything he'd learnt at all of his different clubs over the years. Really hope you enjoy this week's episode of The Drop-In with Lutz Pfannenstiel.
Lutz Feinstiel, thank you so much for joining us on The Drop-In. It is brilliant to speak to you. We're speaking to you today from your sitting room, right? Because you've chosen to take your one day off before the first game of St. Louis City, who you are the sporting director for, to talk to us. How lovely of you.
Yeah, you know, it's always good to use a day, a very useful bank holiday, not my favorite time of the year, to be honest. Like, I'm getting easily bored. So let's have a nice chat.
You haven't taken any time off at all in the last, what, 2-3 years since you've been setting up this team?
Yeah, I arrived in August 2020, and since then I really didn't have any time to take a day off or take a holiday with the family. There's so much to do. There was so much to do. So it's I kind of knew it when I took that job, you know, to build a team from scratch. There will be definitely no boredom. There will be definitely no time to chill. And the last 2.5 years were great. So we're now really coming to the, I will call it, the final patches to build the team, have our preseason now, 2 more training camps, and then we're starting end of February with our first ever MLS game.
Huge question then. What is the first thing that was on your list when you realized you were going to be a part of building a football team from scratch?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing what we did was sitting down with the owners and see what do we have, what do we don't have, or where do we want to start. And I realized very quickly that the intention or the motivation of our ownership group was very different from most investors in football. It's a family business. It's a family where they want to make St. Louis into a very special city, where they realize that, you know, it's more about community and not just about winning games or selling players for millions of dollars. It's so much more than just the football. And that kind of project reminded me a lot also of Hoffenheim, where I worked for many, many years. So I kind of knew from Hoffenheim, where the club was not completely new built, but it was a team which came out of nowhere, where we can do things. And one of the first things I said to the ownership, let's cut all the ties you have to youth clubs and other clubs in the region. Let's cut them all. And I want to start literally from ground zero, white piece of paper. I don't want to have any connection to anybody. I want to build everything from the community system to the academy, everything from a complete white piece of paper. Get my own people in, but also get to know all the local people in football, and then really pick and choose the guys who can follow the philosophy which we're rebuilding, or the DNA which we are building. And I think that was the first few weeks to really wrap the head around, where do we want to go, where do we want to start, and that the community needs to be the start of everything.
This is so interesting, because of course that's something that we think of as being quite a European element to football, whereas in the States, so much younger in terms of their football heritage, except St. Louis has got soccer heritage from the 19th century, as I understand it, right? So how is that something that you've tried to invest in when you're talking about the community? Is that something that you've taken into account, trying to connect with and build up the fan base?
Yeah, you have to imagine, I think there is a few very special things about soccer or football. I still call it football. I need to sometimes.
I was
switch
trying
to
help. I was trying to do the right thing but we absolutely can call it football.
let's stay with football. And I think the most important thing is, yeah, I mean, I know I needed to figure out what actually is St. Louis. I mean, I played over here. I played in the States and in Canada. So I know the setup and I knew the league. I also signed a few players like Zach Steffen, the former goalkeeper of Man City, on loan to Düsseldorf. So I always had a good connection to the football over here. But the most important thing there was to somehow realize, what does soccer in St. Louis mean, or football in St. Louis mean? And here, as you said, the history here is absolutely amazing. You know, when America beat England in a World Cup, there was actually five starting players from St. Louis on the field. So there was always a massive kind of following in the city. Of course, there is the Blues in ice hockey, which is a world-class team. There is the Cardinals in baseball, which is one of the two top teams in the history of that game. But you do find a lot of people who are crazy about football. And I realized that very quick, that football means a lot here. But then the other part was that football here in the States, especially when it comes to the youth, is a pay-to-play system. So it's not for everybody. Not everybody can afford to send their kid into a good academy. It costs you up to $10,000 a year. And a family with lower income can simply not afford that. So as older you get, 13, 14, 15, that is when lots of the talents just disappear because the parents can't afford it anymore. And that is when we had that talk with the ownership and said, we said, you know, we want to have that community part. I don't want to have an academy starting with an 08, U8 or U10. I want to focus a little bit later, U14, U15. But before that, we need to be that neighbor who goes to the clubs, who goes to the parents and offer a program where we coach the coaches for free and where we give kids an opportunity to play the game for free. So, of course, some of the business people who invested a long time in their model, they're not the happiest bunnies in the world. But in the end of the day, we give opportunities to people who simply have a lot of talent but don't have the financial background to follow it through. We need to build everything on three kind of pillars. So the community, which is going out there, make the game accessible to everybody, and then pick up the best talents from the region. We have a good academy because I think there is a lot of talent here. And then, of course, on the short term, the professional team, which somehow, unfortunately, I will always be measured as a sporting director what happens with the first team. In my brain or also in the ownership's brain, it's so much bigger than just the first team because the community and academy part, that is the future. There is a legacy which we really can put out there, not just for 5 or 10 or 15 years to come, but for an eternity. And Kate, if you know the Midwest, you know, in the United States, it's a little bit, it's not LA, it's not New York, it's not Miami, it's a different kind of setup. I would compare it more to Middlesbrough, Newcastle, Sunderland,
right.
Liverpool, more like the north of England,
yeah.
Where you want to see your own guys out there who not just like the big time Charlie's dribbling a little bit around, but we want to see the kids who grinding and working and put every time 150%.
That's awesome. And it's so interesting to hear about the community that you're trying to create around this brand new football club, because you, as the only footballer to play professionally on every continent or every available continent, I guess, you have, as a result of this, a unique footballing perspective on the culture of football across the globe. You know, you've experienced fan cultures and communities in a way that is unique. What do you think living in all these different cultures has taught you?
You know, actually, football really is very different on every continent. Sometimes even in differing countries, it's already so much different, even though it's neighboring countries. For me, it helped me a lot when I started to coach, but then especially when I was the head of recruitment in Hoffenheim, to literally have the biggest phone book in football history, where in every country where there was ever a ball kicked, I can make a few calls and I figure out immediately what is happening there. That just helped me a lot, but not just in getting to know players or finding players. It's also about how you integrate players when they're coming to you. So having lived in South Africa, having lived in Brazil, having played there myself, I know maybe a little bit more how people think, how the culture in football is, how you can make a player feel welcome. You know, that it is very, very different. And I think I always call it intercultural competence.
Mm.
It's a word you have to write down. I think maybe I actually made it myself. I have no idea. But I think that means for me, when I talk to an agent from Brazil, I will talk to him different than I will talk to an agent from Canada or from the United States.
Mm.
When I talk to a player and his parents from South Africa, I will talk completely different than to a player from Norway, because there's other values, there's other ideas, there's other culture. And that culture also reflects into the game of football, of course. So it's a little bit like, I'm a little bit like the Austin Powers, international man, what is it? Man of international mystery of football, basically, to kind of like figure out how to make things work.
Yeah.
Not just by talking some shit,
yeah.
But by really knowing what you're talking about, because you lived there, you dealt with people. And I sometimes find it funny when people say, well, I was for 6 weeks in New Zealand on a holiday and I know everything. No. They know nothing. It's like living, being a holidaymaker or even a traveler doesn't make you understand the culture. You need to have lived there for a while. You need to have worked there, and you need to literally spend time on the football field with coaches, players, fans, to understand really what is happening and what is really important and what's the differences in certain cultures.
Quite right. And it's an interesting one, though, Lutz, because this was almost accidental how this all came about. Am I right in saying it wasn't some strategy you decided I'm going to play all over the world, this is what I'm going to do, except that you turned down the chance to play at Bayern Munich when you were a very young man and decided instead to go abroad?
When I was really young, I was extremely confident, but somehow there came the moment when I also realized, like Bayern Munich, Oliver Kahn, that I just won't play there. And I think sometimes it's important to rate yourself or judge yourself in the right way. And it has a little bit to do, I think, also with the character. For me to be a second goalkeeper and sitting for like 8 years on the bench in Bayern Munich, yes, maybe I would have made a little bit more money, but I just simply think I would have got crazy. You know, I needed to play. This is also why, if you look at my CV, I didn't just change club for fun. It was always for me, I wanted to play. And if I realized I'm playing in a smaller league and I'm extremely good, I wanted to try the next step. And then ending up on the bench made me think, no, I just can't do that. So I was too, sometimes not patient enough. People would agree with that. But for me, it was more important to play football. And with Bayern Munich, I had the feeling that I was a decent goalkeeper to play maybe in one of the top leagues in the world, but not for a top club like Bayern Munich. Fighting against Oliver Kahn, I would have never been a number one. And my young brain by then realized that and said, let's have fun and play. You know, I don't wanna sit. I wanna play football and not sit football.
Do you regret at all never staying at a club more than 2 years?
That's actually not true. That's just what it looks like. It because what
right?
I give you one very good example.
Okay.
So actually, I played for 5 years or even 6 years for the same club in New Zealand.
Right.
But it doesn't look at it when you look at my CV, because number one, we always kept on changing the name because the format changed. So we came from a club league into a state league into a regional league, and secondly, instead of being in New Zealand for 12 months, where I play for 6 months, I have 3 months pre-season and 3 months holiday, I always was crazy enough to say to the club, hey, can you please loan me out? I go somewhere else and play.
What, in the off-season?
Yeah, I played 6 months in New Zealand, and then I played 6 months in America, 6 months in Canada, 6 months in Norway. I think I played for 4 years or 5 years, 12 months, with like probably 60 or 70 games a year. So I just had an unbelievable run of games, because I remember that one game I played in New Zealand, the last game, I jumped directly after the game on the plane and I played 4 days later in Norway.
What do you think it is about? Do you think it's a particular characteristic about you that means that you are able to assimilate so quickly into all these different kinds of cultures?
Honestly, that's a great question, and I believe yes, but I can't tell you for sure, because one of the things what always happened to me, usually somehow you create for yourself like a profile, and the profile was, if somewhere a goalkeeper gets injured, if somewhere there's a goalkeeper problem, you always can call that guy because you throw him in the cold water and he performs.
Mm.
So for me, it was never an issue to basically arrive in a country on a Wednesday and don't know even the names of my teammates, but 3 days later, play the game. Every time I had that debut or that first game, I never really played a bad game. The bad games came later. So I had probably that kind of unique talent to adjust myself extremely quick in a surrounding I didn't know.
Yeah.
But why and how, I have no idea.
You've got a knack for it, obviously. It's not just being able to turn up and play. It's also presumably being able to talk to people and being able to, yeah, be friendly and adapt to the situation. And also, it sounds like you're kind of a firefighter in some of these situations, which it sounds like that is an approach that you relished.
Yeah, I think one of the things which I always enjoyed, you know, when you're going to play abroad, I mean, I give you an example. The Brazilian player who plays in Germany or in England, he still has Brazilian friends. They still eat Brazilian food. Mm. It's kind of like doing that what you used to. Or for me being a German, I mean, I wouldn't go overseas and go into Malaysia into a restaurant and say, hey, I want to have some sauerkraut, you know, I mean, or a sausage. That is how I spend my time abroad. I try to live like a local,
yeah.
Instead of trying to live your life you used to in a foreign country. Mm. That was never really interested me.
Rangers still going at them. Here's Arthur Newman cutting it back. It's in. It hit the underside of the bar and I thought it was in. Tremendous move by Rangers again.
Great save by Chan.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Hey, tell me, I'm glad you brought up New Zealand. What's the story about you and a penguin in New Zealand?
Yeah, that comes up, I mean, all the time. Actually, I just told some of my new players, because they somehow read the penguin story, so I had to explain it. You know, I love animals. So
let's get it out there. And there weren't any penguins harmed in the making of this story.
Of course not. I mean, I would never harm any animals. So, I'm a big dog person. And in New Zealand, it was somehow the president of the club, he put me into some penguin colony, which was the biggest one outside the Antarctic. It was like thousands of penguins. And somehow I had before some monkeys and some lizards and stuff, you know, and then I thought...
As in, you were keeping these in your home or you were visiting them?
Oh, yeah. No, I kept them in my home, yeah.
Monkeys and lizards? Monkeys?
Yeah. Don't have a monkey at home?
No, he's out, actually.
No. But the penguin story was actually very simple. I somehow believed that a penguin would make a cool pet. I was very wrong. And I kind of borrowed, I never stole a penguin. I borrowed the penguin and tried to figure out if I can make him into my favorite pet. Within 24 hours, I realized that it was a wrong decision because he smelled terrible, like a fish factory. And he also was not very social. So I decided to put him exactly back where I found him.
Because he needs friends as well, presumably, because you're not a penguin, even if you're a good, friendly guy. You can assimilate into perhaps
different... Could have taken a second one, though, in case, so that would have not been the problem. But no, it was a bit of a... I mean, now I'm a little bit older, I wouldn't do it anymore.
Okay, I'm kind of glad to hear it. You also, my goodness, you've, in terms of your career just generally, you've also had some less amusing situations, including ending up in prison in Singapore for supposed match fixing, right? Which was not, you were, how did that play out? You were not found guilty of this, but you were in prison.
Yeah, it wasn't really... match fixing, it was, you could call it match fixing related, but it was actually so kind of plain stupid in the end of the day that it's pretty easy to explain. I mean, I was asked by a guy which was more or less, in my opinion, a football fan, and it was one of the person or one of the people who asked me the typical question everybody asks you.
Are you going to win next week?
Yeah, next week you play again. For example, next week you play against Sunderland. Are we going to win? And what do you say as a goalkeeper? You say, of course, we're going to win.
Yeah.
So it's three times in three different locations within three or four different months, I bumped into this person and I told him three times, yeah, we're in great shape. We're going to win. And actually for that, I literally went to prison and there was a 28-year-old judge who told me that I played better than normal. So I said, thank you very much, but that doesn't really make sense to me. So where exactly is the corrupt element? Even if I would play better, I just do my job, so I didn't play any better. So at the end of the day, we won two of the games and we drew one where I saved the penalty, and I still was put for 101 days into prison. One of the toughest prisons in the world, where... death penalty and caning is something which happens, where I, you know, had to really fight every day to stay alive and stay healthy and kind of really change me as a person. You know, I was a bit the typically spoiled footballer who liked cars and girls and nice clothes, and that kind of moment, I think, changed my mind quite a lot. I think you realize in such a situation very quick what is really important, and actually family is the most important thing. Believing is the most important thing. And I think you start to appreciate the little things in life, which are much, much more important than the material things.
I can see how that would have changed your perspective on a lot of things. Something else that I imagine made you reassess a number of things was when you were playing and you were at Bradford Park Avenue and you were pronounced dead, I believe, after being collided with, or is that the correct term? I may not be using the correct term, but your heart stopped beating in this collision on the pitch, right?
Yeah, you're pretty right. I mean, you know, Clayton Donaldson, former Hull City player, you know, extremely quick. Like, I thought I was quicker than him, but I wasn't. You know, it was like a 50-50 ball. The goalkeeper, I came out and Clayton tried to jump over me, and somehow he tripped over his own feet in some ways, and he knocked me with his knee right in my sternum. And that is one of these injuries where, so basically, your lungs collapse and then you can't breathe anymore, and then your heartbeat stops and you basically die. If you have a doctor or an ambulance right there, or you know, you obviously, it's easier. In that case, it was a boxing day on a cold day in West Yorkshire. We were not that well equipped, but we had a very smart, experienced physio called Ray Killick. So if you listen to the podcast, thanks, my friend.
Yeah.
And I just was in touch with him a few months ago again. And Ray actually gave me mouth to mouth, and he got me back three times. But three times I drifted away, and then when the ambulance came, they slowly got me stable, but I still was in coma for another 2.5-3 hours. And yeah, I somehow realized there is still a plan out there for me, and I was lucky enough and fortunate enough to survive.
Did you always feel like you were a lucky person?
No. To be honest, I mean, look, we talk now since 20 minutes, and since 50 minutes we talk about the worst situations in the world. So being locked up as an innocent guy in one of the worst prisons in the world and being killed on a football field, I wouldn't consider myself that lucky.
Mm.
But I think I'm quite mindstrong. You know, I'm like stubborn and I'm a fighter. So I always believed that you can make something out of your life, even though things are not going your way and everything is possible. You can make it work. If you would have asked me, if some little angel would have flown down when I was sleeping on a concrete prison floor next to a murderer, if you would have asked me, hey, in 15 years you will be the CEO of a German Bundesliga club, I would have probably told the angel to piss off because I wouldn't have believed him. But everything is possible.
Mm. That's reflected actually quite closely in your career, it seems to me, talking about how you've taken these decisions to move or to try and get more game time when you're in positions where you might not play. Sometimes this tag of being the journeyman player is used in a slightly negative way. And Jefferson Lewis, the Dominican striker, who said he played for 40 clubs, and he said it becomes like a curse because people think you can't stay in one place for long enough. Do you feel that? What do you feel about the tag?
I did feel it sometimes that managers and coaches were a little bit careful because something was wrong with the kid because he always moves. And to be honest, now changing the chair and looking at some players' CVs, I also believe that it does sometimes make you think twice about a player if he keeps on moving. But, you know, it somehow made me the person I am.
Mm.
So I don't see negative. I often get that question, well, would you do things different in your life? You know, for example, should you have signed in Bayern Munich or should you have tried to stay longer in Wimbledon or try to make your way in Nottingham or whatever. And I always say no, because if you have asked me maybe 6 weeks after then, I would have said, yes, definitely, I should have done everything different. But now, like 20, 30 years after, I don't think so.
Lutz, tell us about the Crazy Gang then. So you were, of course, around them.
It was, for me, a culture shock, you know, coming there. Like, imagine a young German guy with earrings and a ponytail, coming there, and then the first thing you see is Vinnie Jones, Mick Harford, Gary Blissett, like that typical English, super English kind of players. However, it was a way. I mean, I think, you know, lots of people spoke about bullying and that and this, and I mean, I also had an interview with BBC about, well, were you bullied, you know, at the time? I never felt, really, to be fair, I didn't feel bullied. I mean, I was laughing quite a lot. Now, especially, again, now looking back, it was hilariously funny because the practical jokes which were played on each other, I mean, some of them were, of course, over the top. But the way, and that also a little bit reflected to St. Louis by building a culture.
Mm.
Look, Wimbledon, they had no big wages, they had no big bonuses. It was a small club training in Roehampton Park where literally dogs were walking around doing their business like 5 meters next to the goal. You live in a little stone house where two older ladies fried some bacon 20 minutes before training. So all that nutrition, I mean, it was just so different. But the connection between the players, the way you started to basically fight as the outsider against all odds, the way people were connected, that was unique.
Do you find yourself applying specific things you've picked up? So we talked about the fan culture, but specifically as well, talking about the things you've experienced as a player, and of course you've worked all over the world generally as well. Do you find that there are specific things you draw on in the day-to-day runnings at St. Louis?
What we did here, we built like a very international team. So we had lots of players who played in the Bundesliga before, yes, but we only have one German player. So we have Roman Bürki from Switzerland, Ostrad from the Czech Republic, Klaus from Brazil, Eduard Löwen, German guy. Mm. So all these guys are playing in the Bundesliga, but they're coming from different cultures. Now we added a South African player. You know, so it's a great mix of players. It's a great mix of cultures. There's literally everybody is united, and I think that is what we want to reflect. We don't want to be just a Midwestern local club. We also want to be seen as an international club. And we want to feel international people welcome. Mm. I mean, we will sign. Now, we have two Brazilians in our club, but we also will sign sooner or later an Asian player. So we are. I'm always on the lookout. But in the first year, I think it's also important not to mix too much, because otherwise you lose. You know, there will be a language barrier, there will be that. So the reason was why we signed lots of players from the Bundesliga is, number one, they do speak English and German. But number two, they know the way we play. And we have a pure pressing philosophy, very much based on Hoffenheim and Red Bull. So we literally press and counter-press and work harder than most other teams. So we're going in that kind of football direction. Mm. And this is a philosophy. We're not just playing with the first team. Our U15, our U17, our under-23s, we're all playing the same way. This was that decision I made with the ownership on day one. We play our style and we will follow that through, even though maybe the first few months don't work great. You know, expansion teams in America, usually they get pushed around. I believe we don't get pushed around, but traditionally or historically, expansion teams have problems. And we still need to stick to our principles. We need to stick to our identity, to our philosophy. And in the long term, we will have success.
It's not often you get to see a dream being built right before your own eyes. But that's exactly the case for generations of soccer fans in St. Louis. And while the team may not play a game until February, folks are ready to get going right now. And if you're looking to secure seats for the inaugural season, many of those have already been claimed too.
What a huge conversation we've had. So many different things talked about, and we really appreciate you reflecting on some of the more difficult things as well that you've faced in your career, not even, you know, in your life, really. Astonishing to think of you in that jail in Singapore and the experience you had in England, but also running around with the crazy gang and experiencing all these amazingly widespread cultures and fan experiences that you've had all over the world. So thank you so much for sharing us. We know, of course, you've got Charlotte on Saturday, right? So how are you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, now friendly games coming up. I think everybody waits for the first opening game against Austin away, but I think the big day will be the 4th of March.
Okay.
Our home opener again against Charlotte. You know, another team which was last year an expansion team, so they know what we're talking about. Well, we know what they're talking about, so it's kind of like the same feeling. And that is the day, I think, what we all worked for.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just really, really hope, and this is one of my biggest wishes, that first home game, that we can show a good performance, that we can actually make St. Louis proud, but also that the players have that feeling that they are in a special kind of surrounding.
Yeah.
So it will be, even I had such a bright and strange career, but I think these two games, Austin away and then Charlotte at home, that will be two highlights in my football life as well.
Amazing. Best of luck with it. We all hope you do really, really well and continue to prosper in this absolutely, well, extraordinary career of yours. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I enjoyed that one so much. It was quite an unusual conversation, really, in the context of the drop-in. And it was also, he's just so entertaining, I hope you felt, even given the massive range of topics we were talking about, some of them really, really tough. He was obviously just such a raconteur and a person who wanted to share his stories and to really revel in the joy of the football community. I found it so interesting what he was saying about trying to build that in St. Louis. And I suppose that community is the most important thing wherever in the world you are. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. Do remember to get in touch with what you thought of it on Twitter at Football Ramble. We're on Instagram as well. And you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at KVL Mason. I'll speak to you very soon. Take care.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hold up.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.